Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is the start of the post-game show for the United States and Mexico in the CONCACAF Men's Olympic qualifying. We still have stoppage time here going on in the second half. Mexico still lead 1-0. They are trying to advance and attack the U.S. net. The U.S. still has the ball at midfield, and it looks like either there's a foul, which there is a foul, so it's not over just yet in this one, but at the moment, the USA down a goal to nil. Honestly, this is the only goal that they have conceded in the tournament so far. Now the final whistle is blown. It is all over. Mexico, which of course, honestly, this was expected. They were going to win the tournament as the hosts. I shouldn't say win Group A as the hosts. But, you know, obviously, if a certain error was not made from the United States back line, this probably would have been a scoreless draw. It probably would have been a scoreless draw. And in all honesty, I think Mexico got lucky that they got a goal out of this one. Joining me right now, Kartik Krishnar, World Soccer Talk. Kartik, I mean, mixed emotions, but even though in some ways they lost, I think the U.S. had a very good performance in this one. I really think they had a solid performance outside of the mental error that allowed Mexico to convert. I thought they had a slow start to the beginning of the second half, but then they grew back into the game. But outside of that, I thought they've had some good moments in this one.
I disagree slightly. I think the U.S. was really poor throughout the first half. I think the goal actually woke them up. I mean, the goal came right before halftime, and generally when that happens, that's a bad harbinger for things to come. But what ended up happening is I think the U.S., the first, I would say, 6 minutes of the second half were pretty good, and then dropped off slightly. Then you had effectively a triple substitution. They weren't all at the same time, but with Ferreira, Yule, and Jonathan Lewis coming on, three guys that we assume will start on Sunday. And of course, we had talked about the other day, Daniel, the idea that you don't Ferreira. Particularly, maybe you don't even risk him in this match. I like Jason Kreis. I will say this now in hindsight. We got away with it, right? You didn't pick up another yellow. I like the statement it sent the team. I think it said, hey, we're going to try and win this. We're going to go after this. And I think for the final 30 minutes, the U.S. were the better team. So I'll slightly disagree with you. I think the U.S., that goal was kind of freakish. It was an error. But I think the U.S. were all over the shop in the first half. I mean, there were large periods of the first half. They couldn't string together two or three passes. Generally looked very tentative. But I think that the second half was much better. And the question now is, maybe Sebastian Soto is not the guy you can play centrally. You know, I was thinking maybe you could play him centrally and bring Ferreira off the right side, making diagonal runs. Maybe you have to play Ferreira centrally on Sunday, whether it's Canada or Honduras, and Salcedo on one side and Lewis on the other, and you just go with that front three. I thought Soto was pretty poor today, and I guess I do agree with you. I just disagree with you that the U.S. were unlucky in the first half. I think they were clearly the inferior team. And then I would say minutes 45 to 60, about even 46 to 60, and then minutes 60 to 90, I give the edge to the U.S. So I guess, Daniel, the way we can look at it is the U.S. were the better team when they had Yule Lewis and Ferreira on. So that's something to be very pleased about. The thing to be concerned about is just the depth just isn't there. But you have to win one game. That's all you have to win at this point, right? So the depth may not matter.
That's it.
You need your best 11 on Sunday, win that match, and then you might play Mexico again in the final and lose 4-0. Who cares? You know, you're in the Olympics at that point.
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah.
Exactly. All that matters is you're in the Olympics. Well, here's the thing. I felt, honestly, I thought Mexico was not tuned in automatically. I thought maybe they had a decent start to the match, but then I thought they really fell out of favor. Like, opening 15 for Mexico, I thought they didn't have anything. And then finally, I guess there was a shot of the coaching staff of Mexico saying, okay, we got to change things up. And once they changed things up after the first 15 minutes, then they looked a lot better, which that's what I thought I saw. So that's where I thought I'd give the edge to the U.S. I thought they had a good start to the match. But, yeah, I agree with you. Like, you know, throughout the rest of the first half, the U.S. did not look like themselves. Absolutely. And I thought that was a poor error by the U.S. to allow themselves to get scored on.
And
because,
so
you know,
also,
if you don't
– yes. Daniel, I hate to say it. I mean, it was American fans like to – you know, a lot of American men's national team fans will look at what happened in the final third and see who's in the frame and not understand that it was a bad giveaway from an attacking player and a completely unforced error that then led to a chain of events that led to a goal. So this, we've seen this time and again. You know, I've seen the England game at Wembley. Pulisic give the ball away, and then the goal fans blame Brooks or Reed for the goal. And then Bradley give the ball away in matches, and I'm a big Michael Bradley fan, but Bradley give the ball away, and then the defender gets blamed. I mean, again, this seems to be a recurring theme in U.S. men's soccer history recently, that highly touted attacking players give the ball away in bad positions, particularly when we're playing out of the back, and then everybody is scrambling after that, right? So, I mean, I put that goal squarely on the unforced error, as I think you did also.
Exactly.
So, yeah, sorry, I just wanted to interject that because I don't want to get down this rabbit hole where we're blaming defenders and saying that they were making mistakes. And I think the other thing, Daniel, I should have said this at the outset, another big takeaway is Ochoa in goal, I don't think it's even close a 1-2 contest. Ochoa showed me something tonight, and I might tweet this. Probably will tweet it tomorrow. He showed me something. He showed me some composure tonight that I think even a lot of U.S. senior goalkeepers, some of the great goalkeepers we've talked about in our history, haven't had in matches against Mexico. So I really liked what I saw from that kid today.
Oh, I love Ochoa. Ochoa is fantastic. And like I said, you know, if there's going to be a battle between him and Zach Steffen, you know, let's go. Let's see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And if Ochoa unseats him, then go for it. I mean, if Zach Steffen still reclaims the first spot, I'd let Ochoa be in the Gold Cup tournament this summer. I give him a qualifier here and there to give Zach Steffen a break. Someone's going to be number two, or someone's going to force Steffen to be number two. So we're going to have to wait and see what's going to happen. Real quick, we got my friend Ahan from Chicago calling in. He wants to give his take. Go ahead, Ahan. What did you see from this one?
Yeah, thanks first of all. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I think, you know, when I look at these types of games, I think the main thing I'm seeing is, you know, I want to see how Christ and his team executes the system that Berhalter's got them playing, which is building out of the back, you know, breaking lines at the passing. I think it was good. I mean, I like Kessler had a couple moments where he really looked confident stepping in midfield. And, you know, they had their moments, but I think that, I mean, they lacked the quality in midfield with Johnny had a shocker in the first half. I mean, Perea is just not that number six who's going to sit deep and spray balls around, you know, and break lines with his passing. And, you know, Dotson's more of a center attacking mid. He's not going to really pick up the balls in between the lines and, you know, connect the midfield to the front three. So I think that, you know, I like they were trying to build out of the back end. It's this Mexico team. And obviously, Mexico was pressing pretty decently. It was nothing crazy, but they're doing a good press. But, you know, I think ultimately quality just wasn't there, especially in that midfield. I mean, that midfield was just brutal. I mean, I think it was just brutal. And then even when Jackson Yule came on, Yule gave a little more composure, but still had his moments where, you know, he just got just awful passing. So, I mean, like if I'm looking at the performance, I thought they were good defensively. I mean, USA teams are typically good defensively, so I mean nothing special there. You know, good defensively. Just I don't know what Soto was thinking on that one. I mean, fucking nine should not be dropping in your six. I mean, I mean, if you have to drop that deep to get the ball, that's ridiculous. And then I thought Mexico just bang average. I mean, bang average performance in Mexico. Nothing special. You know, they didn't try anything. Let their quality shine through with their front three, and you know that's what happened in the goal. And yeah, nothing much to say. But you know, I think I'll take the 1-0 loss. I'm disappointed. Obviously, I think a lot of us are disappointed. I thought we were going to win. I also think we were going to win. We could play, you know, Messi's Argentina team, and I still think we'll win. But, you know, I thought there was a couple of good moments. I thought there's still a lot of questions, though. And what really disappoints me is that, you know, I think I have more questions than answers right now about this Houston national team poll just because of some of the performances by guys like Ewell. I mean, Salcedo had a shocker today. I mean, I rated Soto so highly, and he was poor today. Johnny, I mean, you've heard so much good stuff about him. He was poor today. So, you know, I think it's, I mean, they got to qualify, but I don't know. I have mixed feelings. I think it's good, but I think there's still a lot of question marks there.
Yeah, I'll agree with Ohan with that, Kardik, because it didn't feel like your typical USA-Mexico game. I mean, I'll be honest with you. There were times even Mexico was just not on their game. I thought that they just were playing a bit average. They're playing good defensively. I mean, they brought up the ball, but as always, I think with these kids, it's like, well, if I go down for the foul, I get the foul call, then, you know, we'll take advantage. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, that didn't happen. And even that one play in the second half where, you know, I mean, there was contact, but it's not enough contact to push someone down or anything like that. And they didn't even get the call for the foul, which, of course, they were upset. But, I mean, Antuna was upset. But still, though, I really thought Mexico the under-23 team did not bring their A game at the same time. I think this was probably we all understand it's under-23s. It's the Olympic qualifying tournament. They both had to qualify, which they did. They're going into the semifinals. We'll see what happens in Group B tomorrow. But in all fairness, I think this was probably more of a ho-hum USA-Mexico game than I would say what you've seen in the past, either senior side or youth side.
Yeah, I agree with your point about the two players in particular, about Johnny and Pereira. I mean, so my concern is that if Ewell isn't that number six, one, we don't have because Pereira has not looked like he could string passes together this whole tournament. So if you don't have a good six coming out of this set of players, you are still really thin there. I know we can talk forever about McKinney's more of an eight, and we've seen him play at Juve more of an eight the last month, especially under Pirlo. And Adams, we've talked about his versatility, different positions, but there isn't enough cover in central midfield going into qualifying based on what we've seen. I completely agree with you about Johnny. He's been a disappointment this tournament. And, yeah, Salcedo was poor today. Also, I would agree with that. I just think that we've seen some glimpses from him in the first two matches that give me a little more confidence in him. But, yeah, I have to agree with your assessment about the individual players. I can't disagree with anything you said, honestly.
Right. I think especially when, you know, I think not to get in like the really nitty gritty, but I think that midfield, I mean, listen, if you're the United States, right, and you're saying, okay, we want to make this next step in our soccer, you know, we want to be that team that's going to boss possession against Mexico in Azteca, right? I mean, that ultimately, like, the first thing you say when you're like, okay, we want to do this is your number six and your number eight, okay? And, you know, a lot of times teams, you know, they'll try to, like, their number six, like the U.S. in the past had destroyers at number six, right? So guys like Jones, you know, guys that Beckerman, that are like good in possession, but they're gonna get stuck in. They're gonna stop. They're gonna destroy the other team's rhythm, right? But Tyler Adams has that capability of being a destroyer, but also picking those passes. And McKinney is, you know, he can run around all the field at that number eight. But when you think about, like, okay, you know, this is CONCACAF. Like, these guys are going to go, and they're going to get hacked. And it's CONCACAF. You saw today. I mean, 16 fouls and no yellows. Like, that the yellow card that Herrera got, like, this is CONCACAF. Like, these guys are going to get smashed. right? So it's, I mean, if Tyler Adams gets hurt, right, or Weston McKinney gets hurt, right, then what do you do? Jackson Ewell, I rated Jackson Ewell so highly. I said he was the best MLS player that's on the U.S. men's national team. I mean, he just didn't show that. And when you're trying to – and it was just – besides Jackson Ewell, like, is there a number six on the pool that can – you know what I'm saying? And that make it so crucial. And this tournament has just – I mean, it's really just – it's really not, you know, like, it helped my confidence at all for the U.S. men's national team's mental depth at all. I mean, it's really been disappointing, to be honest. I don't know what you guys have to say, but –
Yeah, and actually you make a great point about CONCACAF, because I think our previous managers always felt like even if you had a ball-playing six or an eight, you needed someone flanking them that was a destroyer. So even when we had Michael Bradley, we would flank him with Rico Clark. We couldn't play Feilhaber and Bradley together. So it would be Clark and Adu with Bradley. If Kleiston was playing, Bradley couldn't play, right? You couldn't play two of those guys together. And then same thing more recently with Jones and Beckerman under Klinsmann. And even going back to Arena, like, if Arena was going to play Richie Williams, he has to play Chris Armas next to him or Pablo Mastroeni next to him. So in qualifying, right, it's different when you're playing a European competition that's going to keep the ball and not be as chippy. So you make a great point. We don't have that guy who is the cover at the six. We're going to try and keep the ball more. We're going to try and spray the ball around a little more with the guys we've got now, control more possession than we have in the past. So I like the balance in our squad first 11, but we know players get injured. We know American players get injured especially, right? McKinney's had some injury problems at Schalke the last two seasons. Adams has had injury after injury since getting to Leipzig. So, I agree with you. Ewell and Perea and really Johnny, all the guys we've seen in the midfield who could play as a six or an eight in this tournament have been disappointing, and I'm now, as we're having this conversation, I'm thinking in my head, who else is out there in our pool that we can throw in? Leggett is an eight, right? Or even a 10. I'm just trying to search for names because you're right. Maybe we don't have the cover there that we thought we did coming into this tournament.
Yeah, I think that's the good thing.
No, I agree. Yeah,
I think it's a good thing, though, about these tournaments. Because, I mean, before the tournament, I think you had every USA fan that penciled in Cardoso as that, you know, in like automatically you're in the squad. But, you know, I think this tournament, I mean, like if I think this tournament was, I mean, it's been a revelation in some ways, because I was really looking forward to, I get all the excuses about our D squad and whatever. Like, I don't give a shit about all that, to be honest. Like, this is the US, like, if we're trying to make the next step, I mean, we have to have better showings than by guys like Cardoso and Ewell. And I mean, Ewell had a poor game against Trinidad and Tobago too, if I think he played that game, last time I remember. But, you know, I mean, I think that I was really looking for this team to make a next step. And I just, Christ, I mean, you could say all you want about Christ and his managerial record, but I thought that he got it wrong, I mean, multiple ways. I thought that this team was just, I thought it was disappointing. I thought the Costa Rica game was disappointing. Dominican Republic, better second half, fine. Dominican Republic should be beating them. That should have been 4-0 every day of the week, you know. And then this game, like, I mean, I actually have doubts against Canada or Honduras if, you know, when we get there. I mean, it's kind of unthinkable, but this is supposed to be the next step. And if this is what we're getting, like, after the last cycle, yeah, we've had better players, but, like, I mean, as a whole, it hasn't been anything like, you know, wow, we're playing great soccer.
No, Go ahead, Carter.
I was going to say last cycle we were really. I think that when we lost in the qualifiers in early 2012, it was a shock to the system, but we knew we were down. But last cycle, the way we lost to Honduras in 2015, I thought, and that was a good squad. In fact, I mean, there were guys that Klinsmann had left on that squad that we probably could have used later that day against Mexico in the CONCACAF Cup, right, the qualifier for the Confederations Cup. Yeah, I agree with you, because then I think now I said, okay, that squad may have been more talented overall, but this squad is going to have a lot of glue in midfield, and we're going to be able to keep the ball, keep possession. As I said earlier before you called in, we couldn't string. There were large portions of the first half where we, with particularly with Johnny and Perea in the midfield where we couldn't string together two or three passes. Even sideways, right? Even side to side, we couldn't string passes together, let alone going forward. So that really concerns me because I think what you will see is potentially Honduras or Canada, whoever we face, drop off, allow us to keep the ball, but then pick spots to press high, create a mistake, and particularly if you have a situation where the team gets discombobulated, Soto has to come back, or whoever the nine is, will be Ferreira probably in that match, has to come back. There's some disorder, then there's a bad giveaway, and then before you know it, the ball's in the back of the other net. So that's really kind of my concern. I'm not feeling terribly confident about Sunday, but I guess maybe still cautiously optimistic, maybe.
I think they'll have enough.
Yeah, they have to get off to a good start.
Right, yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah, they have to get off to a good start at least. They gotta, and I will say this before you go on, let me just say this.
Yep.
And I'm not using it as an excuse, but I'm using it more as fact because did this under 23 team have any any friendlies to play before they went down to Guadalajara? Did they have any friendlies? We all know this pandemic has been really a pain in the butt, you know, from start to finish. And I'm not using it as an excuse, but it's more of a reality right now because that is why I felt that the first game against Costa Rica, yeah, they just got out of there with the 3 points. They got the goal. They did not get scored on. The goal that did get into the net was called for offside against Costa Rica. But the truth is they came out with the 3 points and that's it. Did they play great in that one? Absolutely not. They did not play well at all. They got the goal they needed to get. Second half, they were really, really defending way too much. They were just reacting. They were not progressing. They're not doing the things they were supposed to do. And yeah, I do blame it a little bit on the pandemic because there was no international friendlies of any kind that I ever saw. So I don't, unfortunately, this is the reality that we all have to face. And we all know what goes on. MLS has not started yet. It's going to start in about 2 to 3 weeks on April 16th, 17th, 18th, that weekend. There's been no MLS season to start off in March. The Champions League, the CONCACAF Champions League hasn't started yet either until in 2 weeks at least. So, for some of these players, unfortunately, they haven't gotten any minutes under their belt. They had nothing under their belt at all. I mean, basically, this tournament was it. These two games before tonight's match, those were the games that they had to get back into the swing of things just so that they can get into a rhythm of some sort. And like I said, that's the Costa Rica game that I'm talking about. It's the pandemic. There's nothing you can do about it until, we finally get back into the swing of things. But once again, everyone is on their own clock. Liga MX is probably going on right now. Those players are able to play.
Yeah, that's all
I can say. I know you don't want to use it as an excuse. I'm not. I'm just using it as a reality check because of the pandemic that is still here. But hopefully, the next time we get to the next qualification cycle for the Olympics, we won't have to worry about stuff like this anymore. So that's all I'm saying.
Right.
But you can go ahead, Ahana. You can go ahead.
Yeah. It's just the last thing I was going to say is, I think tomorrow we got Jamaica, and I was just I think my final point is that, I think that, it's time now. Like, the U.S. really needs to start kicking in gear in terms of, playing better opponents, kind of getting it's really disappointing that we can't get, full camp together of all the Euro guys, but, it is what it is. But, I think it's time for the U.S. to finally, make that next step with, the U-20s. U-20s, I thought the hire Anthony Hussey for the U-20 group is a good step. I thought Christ, I'm not a huge fan of Christ. I think we do better, but it is what it is. But I think that, tomorrow versus Jamaica and later versus Northern Ireland and then Switzerland and just in general for U.S. soccer, I think it's time for us to finally, start. It's kind of hard to, put a benchmark, but, the way we just couldn't do it out of the back today, and we've been trying to instill that in the Federation for such a long time, and I think it's time for us to finally start, I don't know how to say this, but making that next step, showing progress, what I'm saying? And I think that the U.S., we've been playing these minnows, like Trinidad and Tobago, right? And you've got guys scoring whoever whatever, doing whatever, just dominating possession. But, like, I mean, you can't read into games like that. And you can't read into games like this either with what's happening. But I just really hope that, you know, today I saw some good stuff, but I saw a lot of bad stuff. I was really hoping that we could finally play out of the back, play great soccer, you know, but that just didn't happen. But I think it's time for the U.S. to really start, like, this World Cup qualifying campaign is starting soon. I know we're going to qualify. We could play an all-MLS team. I still think we could qualify. But, you know, we really, like, if we want to have a good showing at that World Cup, it's time that Berhalter system and, you know, what we're trying to do as a group really starts kicking into gear now. And we see true progress of, you know, we're playing teams like Switzerland. We're playing teams like, you know, we're dominating teams like Wales in possession. Northern Ireland, massive one for me, because that is a similar team to Wales. They've got a lot of pieces. They're going to sit low. You know, how will guys like Robinson look? We need to dominate that game possessionally. And there's no excuse that we had one day of practice or whatever. We need to dominate that game possessionally. If we do that, then I can confidently say we're making progress. If it's the same game against Wales where we've got guys like Robinson struggling, we've got a disjointed midfield with a lot of pieces, then we have a serious problem. I'm just going to say that. And thanks so much for having me. I look forward to the game tomorrow against Jamaica. I think it's tomorrow, right? I think it's 12 o'clock?
Yes, it is. 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Noon
your time.
Yeah. So, take care. Good night, guys. I'm going to hit the hay. And, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thanks for coming on. It's Ahan, my friend in Chicago, Chicago Fire guy. Big supporter for the Chicago Fire, very good guy. And let me just say this, Kartik, and just to continue on, everyone. 4 years since Fire American Soccer Show. This is the CONCACAF Men's Olympic Qualifying USA at Mexico postgame show. Kartik Krishnayar with me from World Soccer Talk as well. This is Daniel Feuerstein. And I'm not disagreeing with anything he says. I think he's spot on. But once again, this is where I think as a whole we're stuck, because it is CONCACAF. We're not in UEFA. We're not in CONMEBOL. We're nowhere near to play any qualifiers in either South America or in Europe right now. I mean, maybe we edge it into the international playoffs, but I'll say this right now. You play in a group with Germany in it, you're going to get waxed both there and here, regardless of what's going on, because the Germans know, Kartik, when it's time to turn it on. I know they always come over here. They play friendlies against us. They love playing friendlies against us. But the truth is they don't show their full team because they don't have to. I mean, they'll bring in a couple of players here and there. They'll bring over some players that they want to look at and see how they perform and what they do and all this and all that. But they don't really show you their entire deck of cards.
Yeah,
that's why they keep it over there.
Right. I think that there were a lot of people who were confused in 2015 when we beat the Netherlands and we beat Germany on successive match days in friendlies. And I was concerned about the state of the team from what we had seen to that point following the 2014 World Cup. It had absolutely no relevance to what then happened in the Gold Cup later that summer, where we got we were terrible, right? We were bad in every Gold Cup match. That, with the exception, I think we played Cuba right in the quarterfinals, and we were fine.
Exactly.
But every group game we were poor, even though we won the group, and then Jamaica beat us in the semifinals.
Right.
So, That's the thing. These friendlies can be deceptive. I love this point about Wales. Wales, we didn't see the full Welsh team, and I thought because Wales was playing a younger team, we would dominate possession and lost that match in midfield. The nil-nil doesn't bother me. It's that I thought we would boss the match, and we didn't. Northern Ireland is a similar team, right? Northern Ireland has been close to qualifying for couple tournaments now. They lost in the playoffs, both for Euros and for World Cup. They made the previous Euros, but they lost in the playoff for the World Cup to Switzerland controversially. But so they were almost a World Cup team in 18.
Yep.
About as close as we were. And then 2020, they just lost surprisingly in the playoff to Slovakia. So they're coming off not qualifying for a tournament they thought they would. So I don't know if they're going to be how motivated they're going to be, but it's a good test because it's a team. Northern Ireland has been a team in Europe that defends deep, and hits people on set pieces, right? Draws set pieces and wins aerial battles. It's the type of team we should be able to move the ball around against and maintain
yeah.
possession and show our superiority in terms of footballing skill and footballing pedigree. So this is the thing I think we all want to see.
Right.
We want to see some evolution in the quality of play, and we want to see guys that can play within Berhalter's system. Because the thing we understand is Berhalter's not going to change his system, right?
No.
And he's not going to
–
we've
no.
already
unless, unless he's
going to
have another major breakdown.
Right. So the thing, Daniel, we have to accept this at this point, okay? I know everyone loves to talk about it. Oh, he shouldn't have gotten the job. He got the job because of his brother. He got the job because they didn't want guys like Jesse Marsh, who we were favoring, who were more opinionated, or guys like Juan Carlos Osorio, who might have a better pedigree. We know that. That's done. It's been over for 3 years, right? He's been the coach now,
yep.
effectively the coach for 3 years. We knew because we knew he yep. was getting the job in the summer of 2018. And we also now know, Daniel, he will not change his system. We know that he is a system guy. He has a specific style of football he wants this side to play, and he is not going to deviate from it. And if the personnel, if it doesn't fit the personnel, he's just going to select other guys. So, let's be fair about this. I think the fact that Berhalter has an actual footballing philosophy, we have to take the good with the bad. I think the fact that Berhalter has an actual footballing philosophy that fits certain players is the reason why Sergiño Dest committed to the U.S. and not to the Netherlands. So that's a victory for the U.S., and I don't know that Dest, as much as I favored Marsh and as much as I would have liked to have seen Vermees get an interview or Osorio, we know Oscar Pereira did get an interview, and I think he probably overall would be a better choice to see now what he's doing with Orlando City, obviously. I think Dest committed to the U.S. because of Berhalter and because it's a good system for him. It's a system he grew up playing in, the Ajax system. And then I think Yunus Musa has also committed to the U.S. because the way Berhalter uses his attacking midfielders fits Musa's preferences. Now, in fairness, it would have been tough for him to break into the England team. They have so many good attacking midfielders, Foden, Mount, Madison, Grealish, et cetera. But we have to give Berhalter some credit that because he has a style, he's getting dual nationals to pick the U.S. But it's also an indication that Berhalter knows that the guy that he's inherited in the player pool can't necessarily play that style, and he's not going to change his system to adapt to his personnel. His personnel is going to have to adapt to his system, which is why if he needs to find a dual national like Dest or Musa to play in his system, he will. So that's also a warning to the other guys who may say, oh, you know, we're fine under Arena or under Bradley, but we can't. It's tougher to play with this quick passing and playing out of the back and kind of this tempo style that Berhalter has. You may not be in the national team, Danny. I hate to say it because I know we've all criticized the Berhalter appointment, but let's just be honest now. He is the manager. These are his preferences. This is his style, and you're going to either fit in the system or you're not going to get capped by the national team. So in the case of the guys that we've been talking about tonight, the three midfielders, Yule, Perea, and Johnny Cardoza, have all shown that they would struggle in a Berhalter system. Kreis is playing a little differently, right? So
right.
I think that's a very bad sign for all three of them, because Berhalter is liable to find a dual national somewhere or someone else who's playing in MLS who can play that sort of game. Now, this is why Will Trapp, I know everyone wanted to criticize Will Trapp, but this is the reason Will Trapp stayed in the national team for so long, because he could at least keep the ball moving side to side, which I'm not sure these guys are showing they're able to do in a high-tempo situation. You may say Trapp never passed the ball forward, but he didn't give the ball away as much as these guys do. So let's go back and think about that. So, yeah, some things we do want to see in the next few days, but I guess that's the senior national team. We need to focus on Sunday with the U-23s.
Yes, we have to. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. You could always watch them. You could always see what they're going to do because that's what Berhalter is going to do. We have to watch what Jason Christ is going to do on Sunday afternoon. We have to watch what Christ is going to do with this under-23 team and how he's going to have to get everyone back down on the same page. Got a sneezer for 1 second. If I can hold – nope. Okay. So, boy. All right. So, anyway, as I was trying to say is that – these players right now, there had to be a rotation. There had to be a rotation in some of these players that needed an opportunity to go out there to face Mexico. Now, you want to call it a B team right there, that's fine. It's okay. You want to call it a C team, that's fine too. You know, you would like to see a little more cohesiveness, especially a guy like Sebastian Soto, which I agree with you, Kardec. He disappointed because I think he might have been out of position, and at the same time, you know, what he did in the under-20s with Tab Ramos, which is a probably completely different system, maybe the 4-3-3 is not to his liking. Maybe he is not someone that is used to a setup like that, to that type of formation. Who knows? Maybe the tactics did not work for him. Maybe he's better coming off the bench than being a starter. Because if he comes off better as a substitute, then maybe he's a little bit more dynamic. Not a lot of minutes. He's probably a 20-minute guy, 25-minute guy. You never know. But, you know, I'm not disagreeing with you if you were upset with Sebastian Soto's performance. So was I, because he did well under Tab Ramos. And I really believe, and this is just my opinion, and I'm not saying Tab does not deserve to be a head coach in MLS or any Division I club. He got what he deserved. He wanted it. He felt his time as a youth national team coach was over and done with. He's going to move on. He wants to move forward. He wants to be with the big boys. And I understand that. And congrats to him and good luck to him this season for his second time as head coach of the Houston Dynamo. But, you know, with no Tab Ramos with the youth national teams, there's something lacking maybe a little bit. And I hope that's not the case. But when you are being managed by a legend of this game, like he is for U.S. soccer, I honestly think you're missing out on something right now. I really think you are.
Yeah, but again, I think U.S. soccer has at one time these jobs were pretty attractive with the federation, but I don't think they are anymore. I mean, I think that the tipping point was when Peter Nowak left the U-23s and being an assistant coach with the full national team in the middle of the – right before the Confederation Cup in 2009 to take the Philly Union job a year before they kicked the ball, or 9 months before they kicked the ball. But from that point on, I think the youth national team jobs have been kind of these poison chalices because the player pool was never as good as the fans believe it is. I mean, this is a continuous problem in U.S. soccer where the fans overrate young players, and then there's this vicious cycle of then the coach being under pressure. Why do you want that when you could manage an MLS team and build something and have control of your own destiny? So Tab did his time and had done very well with the U-20s and moved on. So I think that that's where we're at. With this, you're going to get recycled guys like the John Ellingers and the John Hackworths, and Hackworth has done well with Louisville City, by the way. But you know, these are and Jason Christ now, these kind of recycled U.S. Soccer Federation MLS styled. I don't want to say company men; that's too strong a term. But these guys that have been around and who aren't going to rock the boat too much. So I think. That was the same thing with Anthony Hudson. I mean, I think there've been, although he's doing a fairly good job with that team. I think that there's a hesitation to bring in, just like with the senior national team, a hesitation to bring in a guy who's really going to shake things up. So, the style of football that Jesse Marsh would have brought, and the intensity that Peter Vermees would have brought, that's the sort of thing they want to avoid, it looks like, U.S. soccer. But they have married themselves to a system with Greg Berhalter. So this is pretty important. And there's a very strong Dutch flavor at U.S. soccer with Ernie Stewart serving as the technical director with Greg Berhalter, who played most of his career, or maybe about half of it, but played more in the Netherlands than in any other country. I know he moved around a lot, but he played. I don't think he played most of his career there, but he played there longer than anywhere else, including in the U.S., including in MLS.
Yeah,
and then actually on the women's side, Kate McGrath is a great admirer of Dutch football, and she's now taking over the women's national team program. So there's a kind of a direction in terms of style to playing the way Ajax plays, playing the way the Netherlands play. I think it's very laudable, but when your teams in MLS are not playing that style and your guys in Europe are playing in systems that are different, what Pirlo's trying to do at Juventus is kind of similar. If he's not sacked after this season, because they're not going to win the title, clearly. Let's see if they even stay in the top four. The Scudetto was gone for them. But that's okay for McKinney, but Nagelsmann's style is completely different. The system Adams in, it's actually very similar to what he – the same system he played in under Marsh, actually, at New York with your club. So, the coach he's got now in Julian Nagelsmann, one of the great, arguably top three young coaches in the world, Nagelsmann. He's playing in that system. That's not like the system Berhalter plays. And then you have Werder Bremen doesn't play that style where Sargent's playing. And then obviously when you look at the guys, the U.S. guys in England that are playing in England right now, they don't play in that system. You know, DK plays at Barnsley. They play very much kind of a traditional style, English style, where they push it out to the winger. The winger plays the ball, it's a quick guy. DK fits that system. He may not fit Berhalter's system as well. We're all excited about how he's doing at Barnsley. We're all excited about how he played at Orlando, but we don't know how he fits Berhalter's same system. Same thing with Pulisic. So I guess that's the big question mark going forward, Daniel, is about how these guys fit in Greg Berhalter's system.
Exactly. We'll see what happens, and we'll see what Jason Christ will do on Sunday. Really quick, I want to go to Eric Gomez. He tweeted out, of course, Spanish language commentator for ESPN, for ESPN Deportes. It honestly doesn't even matter that we lost to Mexico tonight. This is our C, maybe D team, and to be honest, making the Olympics was always the main goal, plus we have so much talent in the pipeline. Eltree is going to be so – and this is what he says. Eltree is going to be so sorry in 2030. Do you know who Yunus Musa is? I mean, if you're telling me that you're ranking and rating the USA higher because we have Musa on the team, I mean, hey – I'll take that any day. I mean, the way he's played over in Valencia and the sheer luck of – and I'll say this right now, Cart, the sheer luck of having three Americans playing in La Liga. Two are at Barcelona. One is at Valencia. I mean, this is just an amazing situation. And, this is a dream that has come true for me. I mean, we all know what's going on in Germany, with McKennie in Italy and Pulisic in England. Any American that goes to England, that mountain has already been conquered. The German mountain's been conquered. The Italian mountain has now been conquered. But to me, La Liga is the greatest valley of them all. And to stick our flag there is the biggest conquering dream I've ever had as a American soccer fan, reporter, whoever have you. Because you've got two players playing at one of the best clubs in the world and another one playing in Valencia right now as an American player.
It is, Daniel, but I will once again say that the two guys we have, Conrad De La Fuente is from here in South Florida, and I have a great deal of fondness for him. I hope he breaks through at Barcelona, who withhold judgment on that. But the two guys that are starting regularly, and Musse hasn't been starting as much recently for Valencia. They're having a hard time the last month or so in the league. But Des starts every match for Barcelona, every important match for Barcelona. Those two guys are both dual nationals. So, again, if we can't take credit for our development. We have to say Greg Berhalter has done a good job of recruiting dual nationals. But see, this is the point. Berhalter's system actually lends itself to guys who play in La Liga. that league and the Dutch league are most closely the style of play most closely resembles what Berhalter wants to do with the U.S. I apologize for my cats in the background. We're going to need to have more guys in La Liga if Berhalter is going to take us all the way through 2026. I think he'd prefer to have players playing there. He's not going to – beggars can't be choosers, right? If we have 10 guys playing in the Bundesliga, that's great. I don't think you can complain about that.
Yeah.
But – all things being equal, Berhalter would prefer 10 guys playing in La Liga to 10 guys playing in Bundesliga or Premier League, right? I think that's the league also. As you say, it's the biggest mountain to climb. It's also the biggest mountain to conquer. It's also the league that probably, given who our manager is and given that he's into his own system and style, you want your guys playing in if possible, because I think that's the best simulation for what Berhalter's trying to do here.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the one thing I think that the one failure in this game tonight, outside of the error by Soto, can build from the back when you play against Mexico. I know, like you said, Berhalter's got his system. This is how he develops the attack. You got to build from the back to move the ball up. I really think you just can't do that against a team like Mexico, especially your rivals. You just cannot build the attack from the back. You can't do it. You just cannot build
up. No, but we're going to do it, Daniel. That's the problem. We can say we can't do it. I agree with you, actually. I would like to see a little more pragmatism and trying to beat a press, playing balls over the top, et cetera. But we're not going to do that. Berhalter has made that clear. His style is his style. So we have to get better at playing out of the back, and we have to play a little quicker, and we got to play a little smarter, and the shape has to be good. That's the point. I mean, you're not wrong. I'm just saying he's not going to change the way he's not going to change his style. It's pretty obvious. If we run into trouble in qualifying, it'll be interesting to see if his back is against the wall, what he does. But every indication I've seen thus far, Daniel, is that he is more married to his system than most coaches are at the club level, which is where this stuff happens, let alone the national team level, where you just take a bunch of guys and try and fit them into whatever shape you can. So that's just something we're going to have to deal with. And I don't know if U.S. soccer had thought about this when he was hired, that he's more of a stylist and kind of inflexible, and he's not pragmatic at all, which is very different than Bob Bradley and Bruce Arena, our two most successful managers of all time. Or if they had thought about that and they gave him the job hoping he could impose that style. I don't know what the answer is. Or if he just got the job because of the reasons a lot of people think he got the job. But the consequences are this. He has a definitive style. We are going to play out of the back. We are going to be playing with our fullbacks at times tucking inside. We are going to be playing with a number sixes that are not ball winners but are distributors. So you won't have a Chris Armas in this team. You won't have a Pablo Mascherini in this team. You won't have a Rico Clark in this team. Those kinds of guys are not going to get picked by Berhalter. So we have to just accept what it is and get on with it, unfortunately.
Yeah, we'll just have to get on with it, unfortunately. Final standings, Group A. Of course, Mexico wins the group. They're 3-0. USA takes second place, 6 points. And the funny thing is that's the only goal in these first three group stage games, Kardec, that the U.S. has conceded. They've only conceded one goal. That was tonight. So 5 scored and 1 against in the group. Costa Rica pulverizes Dominican Republic. They score 5. On Dominican Republic, they'll hold on to third place with the win, so that gives them 3 points. And then, of course, Dominican Republic, I would say a valiant effort showing, of course, valiant showing for them. They, of course, are in dead last in Group A with 0 points. This is where there's going to be a lot of scoreboard watching, and there's going to be a lot of teeth being pulled, gnashed, hair being pulled, anything and everything, because you're going to have Haiti taking on El Salvador. Those teams have a point each. You've got, of course, Canada taking on Honduras. They both have 4 points each. So basically, you have three sides up, for two spots, up for grabs, it all depends on what happens, because it's really simple. If Honduras and Canada end in a draw, they'll both go. If one of them loses,
right,
obviously one gets knocked out, and the other game, someone's going to go and take third place and move up to second, because they'll get 4 points on a win, and then it's all goal differential or head-to-head, because as of right now, don't know what it is at the moment on the goal differential or goal, you know, or the aggregate or whatever it is. But I'll tell you right now, Kardec, this situation tomorrow to finish off the group stage in Group B, this is going to be very, very interesting to watch, and we are going to have to stay glued to the television, because that first match will be probably for second place. And then the last match will be for first place.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't have any preference as to who to play. Look, I mean, I guess if you held the gun to my head, I would want to avoid Honduras. But we have to beat whoever we play. It's pretty simple. There's no more excuses. Honduras, you know, I mean, Honduras beat us last time, right? And El Salvador beat us the time before. I think the Honduras team last time was a better team. Canada has an interesting team, but obviously they've got a similar situation where they have two outstanding young players who would be age eligible, and Jonathan David and Alphonso Davies, who are playing at the very top of the world game right now. David playing alongside Timmy Weah, right, at Lille, and has them in contention for the French title. And obviously, Alphonso Davies, I think, has emerged as one of the best left-sided players in the world in the last 18 months. And that's really a big deal for MLS also, how good Davies has become in Europe. But so they're missing some guys. Honduras has got guys. I mean, everybody's missing guys in this tournament, right, because of the timing. So, I don't have a preference. Although, look, I mean, I'd obviously rather play Canada or play someone else and not play Honduras, but we just have to perform. I mean, we have not looked sharp in this tournament, but at the same time, the way we played in the last 30 minutes, maybe especially the last 15 minutes of the match tonight, gives me some real hope for Sunday.
Yeah, me too. And we really have to see this team evolve. We have to see them all on all cylinders, attacking, you know, being creative, go into the opposition's area and just put ourselves in a better position to convert chances and to take a lead and to win the whole thing in 90 minutes or even more, depending on what's going to happen. We could go in extra time. We could go to penalties. There's a lot of questions. I agree with you. Maybe we have a little bit of an answer in the last 30 to 35 minutes, but the truth is there are more questions than answers right now. And you know, it's nice that the majority of this qualifying roster comes from players that do play in MLS, but they're you know, the positions that they are playing in, or it's the system that they're playing in, you know, maybe that doesn't fit them and they need to play a different way. I mean, I think Jonathan Lewis of Colorado Rapids, I think he plays very well in this system. I think he's very comfortable in this system. And you know what? He got some rest today, which was the number one thing. And just to remind everyone, those are under a yellow. Obviously, David Ochoa got a yellow card for the fracas that started in his area towards the back end of the second half. Regardless of that, his yellow card gets wiped out. Every yellow card that was issued in the first three matches in the group stage, they're all wiped out. Clean slate, semifinals, here we come. We're just going to have to wait and see if the U.S. is going to play either Canada, Honduras, or I don't think it'll be either Haiti or El Salvador if they sneak in, because they'll probably have to play against Mexico. But at least either Canada or Honduras, one of those two, they have to watch out for. And as John Strong said on Fox Sports 1, there is no third-place match. There is no international playoff. You either go to the Olympics or you go home crying.
That's right. That's correct. Third place is what we did last time, and then we played decently. in the leg down in Colombia, but we ultimately take it. So there's none of that this time. I mean, look, I thought we had failed when we lost to Honduras in the semis in 2015, and obviously there was false hope for several months that we come back and play in 2016 March against Colombia. So here we are 5 years later with an opportunity with a team that's, again, it's tough to assess. I would say maybe not as good top to bottom as the team we tried to qualify with in 15 and 16, but probably better in central midfield, or we thought was better in central midfield coming into the tournament. So that's we just have to get the job done. And then I think the other thing that's so important is psychologically, it's a psychological hurdle. And I think it makes us much more optimistic about what we might be in 2026 or 2030 in those full World Cup cycles if we can get back into the Olympic tournament. It's been kind of stunning to see us do so well at the U-20 level, but then there's something that's missing when those U-20s turn into U-23s, right? That's been a real takeaway in the last 2 years, that we've done very well at the U-20 level. We did pretty well at the U-17 level in at certain times, not quite as solid at U-17 as we've been at U-20. But even back in the better days from senior national teams, there tended to be a drop-off from the U-20 team to the senior team. So we're already seeing that, the drop-off of the U-20s and the U-23s. And we'll see where it ends up. I mean, I think the thing that Greg Berhalter has done is Berhalter has effectively, and he's already indicating that this will be the squad for the Olympics, right? It's not his team, but he doesn't want to risk alienating European clubs. And I know Bradley is very strategic about this too. I remember talking to Coach Bradley about Jonathan Spector in particular, his selection when he was playing at West Ham, that there were times he would just leave him there so that then the next time he went and asked West Ham would release him. Berhalter seems to be pretty concerned about the possibility that he may not be able to call guys consistently for qualifiers if he knocks on the door too much for the Olympics, which are not a mandatory release event. You have to release for World Cup qualifiers, right? But you don't have to release for the Olympics. So he wants the good relationships with the clubs. Also, I think it's important that players are not scrutinized, because if you start going to international tournaments and leaving your national team, you're leaving your club team, that may affect your next contract or your next move. So I think Berhalter is very conscious of that. So these are the guys you'll see if we qualify. I don't expect to see Yunus Musa or Serginho Dest or Tyler Adams or Weston McKinney, all the age-eligible guys we are, Josh Sargent. None of those guys are going to play in the Olympics. I'm telling you that right now, okay? Maybe one of them will, but not all the rest of those guys aren't. So this is the team. So let them prove it on Sunday that they belong.
Yep. Absolutely. I agree with you there. All right, Clark. Right. No, go ahead. Just finish up. Yep.
I don't think Berhalter wants Musa or Dest going to the Olympics and getting hurt, because qualifying starts right at the same time. So if he has to say, if you know, Yunus Musa, let's say we qualify, Christ wants Musa and wants Dest, Berhalter's going to say no. So just, this is for the fans out there. This is the team we're going to send if we qualify. Don't. I'm seeing all this stuff. Oh, we can call Musa in, we can call Sargent in. It's not going to happen. I think Berhalter, and it's unfortunate because the Olympics have never conflicted with qualifying before, but this time they do. So they're not going to get – qualifying is more important.
I agree with you there. All right, Clark, that's going to do it for tonight. We'll get ready for Sunday. We'll see which time and which game they'll be playing in for the U.S. Now, once again, this is more for positioning. Obviously, bragging rights a little bit, but more for positioning to be in the semifinal match, and we'll see what happens tomorrow night and who they'll face off against. And you'll join us for Sunday afternoon, early evening, for the USA's semifinal matchup. If they win, they go to Tokyo. Kartik, you have a good night, and I'll talk to you on Sunday.
Yep. Talk to you Sunday.
All right, great. For Carter Krishnire, this is Daniel Feuerstein. Welcome once again, and have a good night. CONCACAF Men's qualifying USA at Mexico postgame show. United States falling to Mexico by final of 1-0, but honestly, it didn't matter. They're going to the semifinals in the tournament, and if they win that matchup, they go to Tokyo. Talk to you guys on Sunday. Take care, so long, and bye-bye for now.